You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
This is the Garibaldi Gazette, a weekly podcast about Nottingham Forest. On this, our debut episode, who are we and what are we doing here? FFP? PNS? FFS. Sayonara, Steve. Hello, Nuno. We'll look ahead to the big game at Brentford. And Strikers in Films, it's Basic Instinct. Covering everything Forest from Awani to Zinchenogl. This is the Garibaldi Gazette. Well, hello and welcome and thank you for joining us. A new podcast about Nottingham Forest. Would you believe it? What a week to launch it as well, by the way. You might wonder why we're putting our debut episode out on the same day that Forest are playing a game. Well, we just wanted to coincide with Ian Story Moore's birthday. So that's why it's now on its day. I'm Matt Davis Adams. I'm going to be joined each and every week by two fine Forest folk. Let me first introduce the brainchild of this podcast. It's actor and Reds fan Asha Ali. How are you doing, Asha?
I'm good. Thank you for describing me as a brainchild. That felt so good.
It would also be applicable to our next guest, Nick Miller of The Athletic, of Nottingham once, of Nottingham Forest forever. Nick, we're back doing a Forest podcast again. Who'd have thought it, hey?
Well, I mean, I was talking about this the other day. The one we did before was during the lockdown Chris Hughton season. So even though Forest are possibly on the brink of a ruinous points deduction, this is significantly less bleak. So, yeah.
Yeah, anything not involving Chris Hughton's football is significantly less bleak. We'll start off by telling you a little bit about us. So my name's Matt Davis Adams, and that's a really important clarification I want to make. It's not Matt Davis, okay? He and I look exactly the same. We both host podcasts about Forest, and we both get confused on an almost daily basis. But Matt is Matt Davis. I'm Matt Davis Adams. I've been a Forest fan since 1990. My first game was a 4-0 win against Man United. Many people would say I should never have gone back after that, but I did. Nick and I did the Two Stars pod for The Athletic. I normally cover Chelsea, but I am a Forest fan, I can confirm. Asha, tell us a little bit about your Forest story, because it took you a little longer than it should have to join the party, right?
Yeah, it did, which is really embarrassing. I mean, I've talked about it in other places, but I'll talk about it here. I actually kind of started off as a bit of a Manchester United fan because I was obsessed with Eric Cantona. Yeah, it's awful. Look at your face, Matt. That says everything. But the funny thing is that growing up in Nottingham, my family used to have a taxi firm and a chauffeur business. And we used to drive Forest players. We used to drive like Teddy Sheringham, or we'd take like Des Walker back to London or whatever. You know, and they'd always sort of give us bits and bobs, you know, like signed photos and things like that. So all those things would go straight into the loft. So Forest were kind of always there, you know, and the finals on TV that they were in, I sort of would watch. And then when they were in European competition under Frank Clark and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it is a bit of a longer road. And then it actually culminated in me going to the famous 8-1 game. I actually went there to see Manchester United. I went by myself, but I went there to see Manchester United and I came away a Forest fan. It was just something about the place. I guess it's, you know, until you have that kind of live experience and you're there and you're in a ground and you experience the people, you don't sort of know what you're missing out on. You know, there'll be a lot of kids around the country, you know, from wherever they are, like, you know, some kind of 9-year-old in Reading who supports Manchester City now. You know, he might grow up and actually go to Reading if they still exist and, you know, come away a Reading fan because he's gone to his local team and he's had that experience. So, yeah, I mean, it seems pretty insane to go to that game, you know, which was like an absolute poo show and to come away thinking, oh, my God, I love these people. They were everyone looked after me. It was great. I loved it. It's so convenient. Such a great location. I love it. So, yeah, that's my sort of long-winded way of, but, you know, we'll forget about all that now. And I'm a diehard Forest fan and no one will say anything to me. Don't come at me.
Important to remember that there was a point in that game where it was 1-1 because Alan Rogers equalised after Dwight York's early opener, and that's what the main takeaway from that game should be. How about you, Nick? You write about Forest occasionally for The Athletic, but it's been a lifelong affliction for you.
It has, yeah. First game, I was just looking up exactly when my first game was, which was against Wimbledon just before Christmas in 1988. I had the choice between going to the circus or, I think, using my mum's season ticket, because she can go, to go and see Forest against Wimbledon. I mean, some of the jokes just kind of write themselves there, don't they? But yeah, Forest lost 1-0, and clearly, much like Archer, I was immediately hooked. I had, for years and years, I had very, very vivid memories of seeing Stuart Pearce kind of flashing down the left flank, you know, all big thighs and blonde hair, and being kind of thrilled by this sight, and would, you know, frequently tell people, well, yeah, this was what hooked me in. But I've since looked it up, and Stuart Pearce wasn't playing that day. So it's clearly some kind of false memory. I don't think, God bless him, that I was hooked by Brett Williams and his little moustache playing left back instead. But yeah, from there, had a season ticket for, I don't know, probably 15 years before I had to move away for professional reasons. And yeah, been afflicted, suffered ever since. Usually go to games with my mum and dad, or just my dad, and suffered through the 23 years away like everyone else.
Yeah, it wasn't fun, was it? Well, it's going to be us three regularly on the pod. We'll have some friends join us as we get rolling. They'll either be Forest supporters or Forest experts, or just people who want to talk about Forest. But for this week, it is us three. Right, that's enough with the pleasantries. Let's get bogged down in legal issues and financial wrangling. Listener, you know by now that Forest, along with Everton, have been referred to an independent commission for alleged breaches of profit and sustainability rules in their accounts for 2022-23. They spent too much money and are now likely to get punished for that, basically. Nick, that's a very brief assessment of the charges. Is there anything else you can enlighten us with? I mean, most people, I guess, know by now and are maybe a little bit bored of talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone that isn't kind of quite as au fait with the rules, you are, as a Premier League club, you're basically allowed to lose £35 million a year, and that is judged over a rolling three-year period. So that club who's been in the Premier League is technically allowed to lose £105 million over that 3 years, because Forest were in the Championship for two of the sort of rolling three-year period. They are allowed to lose less, which sort of sounds in some ways slightly counterintuitive, but Forest were allowed to lose £13 million in those 2 years, which meant that Forest figure was 51 million, I think, or 61 million, can't remember, over the...
You could get a job working on the accounts for Forest. I think it was might have been that. Yeah.
Maybe this is how we got into this mess in the first place. People can't count. And the sort of short version of all that is that they lost more than that. We don't know exactly how many yet because the accounts haven't been published, but they've accepted that they breached the rules, and it's now about kind of mitigation, excuses, whatever, however you want to characterize it. The punishment is likely to be a points deduction, but we don't know that and we probably won't know that until April. Slightly farcically, the appeals period, the Premier League have been very firm that the appeals period has to be finished by the 26th of May, which, as fans of the calendar will tell you, is after the end of the season. Although it's only like 5 days after the end of the season, which is particularly absurd. So, yeah, this mess could rumble on for quite some time. And even when we get to the end of the season, we may not know what the full extent of it is.
Lovely stuff. Archer, are we in agreement that Forest deserve to be punished if they broke the rules, or is this all just a conspiracy by the man to keep us down?
I mean, this is so boring, isn't it? Do we really want, like, I hate the club for making me have to look at this stuff. Like, I don't want to look at this. Who wants to look at a spreadsheet? I'm not a spreadsheet guy. I don't want to know about this, you know, but look, the rules are the rules. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's like in any kind of functioning society, there's rules. There has to be, you know. If there weren't, I mean, we'd all be running around in loincloths, you know, like siphoning diesel out of cars with the power of human suction, or, you know, like hunting each other's cats for Sunday dinner. You know what I mean? Like, they're there.
Asher, if you come after my cat, then I'm not going to be happy.
If you come after mine as well, I've got three of them. You're going down. But do you know what I mean? Like, it just feels like this whole kind of conspiracy side of it as well, and all this kind of like, oh, it's, you know, protecting the cartel, and it's all Forrester being punished for ambition, showing ambition. I just don't buy it. They're being punished for being colossally dim, you know, and the sort of like defense that's sort of coming back feels a bit like, oh yeah, but you know, this car goes up to 160 miles an hour, officer. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like, what are you doing? You know, this is a simple thing. This seems to be a Forrest trait. All the simple, it doesn't matter who's in charge, doesn't matter who's paying or not paying the bills. Simple things are the things that trip us up, you know? So you can't give me that sort of, oh, we're being punished for ambition. I mean, is it ambition to sign Huang Guizhou? You know, and that whole like protecting, oh, you know, but they're protecting the cartel. Yeah, but the cartel, they didn't tell us to go and sign Jonjo Shelvey. You know, and it's not like a massive Premier League conspiracy that we ended up signing Emmanuel Dennis. I just don't buy any of that. It's all, you know, this is, you basically couldn't count. This is big business. There are vested interests, you know, and you have failed to meet rules, you know, and this whole like, oh, you know, but if we'd have sold Brennan then, you know, then we wouldn't have done. I mean, I don't know what kind of communication the club have had, but I can't buy that the Premier League will go, oh yeah, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you do you, you know, we'll be fine. We'll square this. It's just mad. Like, yes, it's ambition. And yes, you know, we should be really like grateful, or, you know, we're supposed to be grateful for the ownership for putting in all the money and showing, you know, some sort of fight. But this is this kind of ambition. It's kind of like, it just kind of reminds me of like the Coyote, you know, firing off one of those like Acme kind of heat seeking rockets, you know, at the Roadrunner, and it misses him by a mile, and you just sees it come back and sort of hit him square in the ass. That's the kind of ambition that we've shown. It doesn't work in big, in this kind of environment.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good line from Daniel Taylor in his big read on this on The Athletic. He said, in analysing the Evangelos Marinakis empire, we can accept there can be good and bad, and that it's not treachery to be grateful for his money, whilst also concluding that he could have taken much better care of it. Given the history, Nick, of the ownership, one would think there'll be a sacrifice at boardroom level for this gaffe, or was that already Nicholas Randall? Because he's not the chairman anymore, but he has been kept on as a non-exec director, and a lot of the fingers seem to be pointing at him. Would you expect him to be removed from the non-executive position that he currently holds?
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, he's. I think he's already been sort of sidelined to enough of an extent that he's not really a factor. I suppose it depends who has been telling the ownership all along that no, we're going to be fine. We're operating within the rules, and even if we're not operating within the rules, we're sure we can make some kind of excuse and get away with it. Someone, presumably at the club, has been kind of telling the ownership that, and you know. Well, maybe not. Maybe it was the owners themselves that concluded this. But yes, I mean, you would expect someone to be quietly moved out at some point. Just kind of going back to what Arshu was saying about the ambition argument. If you follow that back logically, the argument is that Forrest needed to show ambition because, you know, we needed to sign all those players because we didn't have a lot of players, you know, when Forrest got promoted with the core of the team or a lot of the first choice team anyway, being loaned. So obviously we had to sign a load of players there. But the reason that that was in place was because of a few years of chaotic management, that we were kind of left in this position where we didn't have a set of players that belonged to us that were, you know, that were sort of ready to be promoted into the Premier League. If you look at teams like Fulham and Bournemouth, they did have those players. They still have a fair number of players who were with them in the Championship when they got promoted. Forest don't, because we had to replace them all, because we, frankly, had a bit of an inadequate squad that was saved by, you know, a brilliant manager and some kind of fairly astute loans and purchases in that season. So you can make various arguments about the nature of the rules and whether they're too onerous on newly promoted teams, which I think there is a reasonable argument for. You could also make the argument that these rules and these financial limits were put in place in 2015 when £105 million is worth less than it is now. So I think that there will be some changes to these rules that's coming up, which isn't, it's not much use to Forest, but you can make all these arguments against the rules, but as you say, Arsha, the rules were there. Forest knew about the rules. They didn't have to sign all these players. They didn't have to have such a sort of chaotic and scattergun approach. So,
That's the thing you can't argue against. It's recruitment. You can't argue. It doesn't matter what, all the other stuff, yes, but like the money you had and the money that you've blown, it's the recruitment side that has got us into this trouble, and that's the problem. There doesn't seem to be, I'm sure that there's loads of people that have talked about this, but there doesn't seem to be, one direction of travel. Doesn't seem to be any kind of like coherent recruitment. I mean, it's funny as well, because I think I remember this correctly, but the club sort of name checked Brighton and Brentford as being sort of like, all model clubs, that we sort of want to kind of follow. But yeah, if you look at what they did and the kind of patience and smarts they've shown, our sort of ownership has decided to sort of look at that and sort of see the kind of like the path they've traveled, and they've kind of gone, yeah, but we can do it a different way. We know a shortcut. And it hasn't really worked, and it's just like, even with the sort of Syrianos, the signings of Taiwo Awoniyi and Mangala and Nyakate, they didn't immediately pay off, did they? And then it was sort of that kind of knee-jerk reaction of getting rid of him. And then you see that they do actually pay off, and then they've gone back, cap in hand and got him back. But it's this other side as well. And it's the side that, you're not sure, in a sort of like, I don't want to say North Korean, but I am going to say it. You're not sure if you feel like you can talk about it. Like, can we talk about the fact that the young Marinakis, 20 something Marinakis, is by all reports and by all other accounts, is acting as a kind of de facto sporting director. Are we allowed to talk about that? If this was under any other regime, if this was Fawaz and one of his like, sons or one of his sort of like entourage was taking over transfers, which it probably were, we'd be kicking off. We'd be in the main stand car park by now, like, kicking off and saying, what is this? This isn't the way to go. We don't need to be sort of pandering to some young guy who needs content for his social medias. Like, this is not what we are about. We shouldn't be doing this. We should be more on that kind of Syrianos track.
All right, well, it's going to rumble and rumble this, so we'll be talking about it for the next few months, sadly. Next, though, we're going to talk about the other level of management at Forest. Right, still not even a month since Steve Cooper was sacked and Nuno Espirito Santo came in as his replacement. We'll get to the Nuno man in charge shortly, but Arsha, just give us a little ode to Steve Cooper, the glory that is, was, and how you felt when you got the news that he wasn't going to be Forest manager anymore.
I mean, what can you say that hasn't already been said? I mean, everything should be overstated, because, I mean, well, you can't really, can you? It's just, and it's the way he came in as well. Like, he came in when Forest were dead. They were just a dead tree, and then this kind of like amazing Welsh tree surgeon comes in and completely rescues the situation, and then suddenly everything's like green and wonderful. I am gonna miss him like hugely. Like, he's definitely one of those managers, and it's not sort of like, they're not empty words. He's definitely one of those people, one of those personalities in football that you will follow. You will have an interest in wherever he rocks up next. You will sort of go, go on. As long as it's not at the detriment of us, there'll definitely be like, go on. What he did was quite naughty, let's be honest. It was, to come in and drag a club from the bottom of the championship to take them to promotion in the same season. I mean, that's outrageous, isn't it?
Fairly Cloughian, you might say.
Yeah.
Even Cloughy didn't do that.
Well, yeah. And it was that season as well was probably the most satisfying. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like the Premier League, yeah, obviously there were highs and lows, and ultimately it was a high at the end, the first season back. But that championship season, the way it unfolded was magic, you know. And some of those players as well, like the team and the way they were sort of all together, and the cup runs and all that kind of stuff, you know. And Brees, having Brees Samba there, oh God, I miss him. You know, Jed, you know, Jimmy Garner, Grabban, you know, it was such a good team, and they were sort of so together. That for me is sort of. It's placed higher in the kind of rank of like his time at Forest, you know. And I'm going to miss the songs, and my daughter's going to miss the songs. You know, we love singing all the Stevie Cooper songs, and I guess it's one of those situations where, you know, it's better to have loved and lost.
Yeah, and Nick, you've written about Steve Cooper for The Athletic. I'd encourage people to go and check that out. One thing that I've thought, as you know, time being the great healer that it is, I'm pleased that he went without people wanting him to go, if you know what I mean. I know that there was a little bit of chat, wasn't there, on social media, as there always is, that you know, maybe he had taken Forrest as far as he could, but there was never outright revolt against him, and 99% of Forrest fans will always love the bloke.
Yeah, and I was in the away end at Fulham as, you know, 4 and 5 goals were going in, and Raul Jimenez was scoring no look back heels. And for the, I don't know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes maybe in the second half, when the score, I think the score was 4-0 at the time, just constant Steve Cooper chants. And it was really, I would have felt much worse about the whole thing if maybe that hadn't happened, or if I hadn't been there in that away end to kind of experience that, because it was a sort of, everyone knew it was the end of it. Obviously the end actually didn't happen for another couple of games. We just all assumed that we'd wake up the next morning to see, you know, official statement, corner flag picture from Forest. But it was kind of reassuring, really, that even though you do hear the various goblins on Twitter who complain about everything and were trying to get Cooper out, started when, you know, we didn't win 2 games at the start of last season or whatever it was. It's reassuring that there was some kind of, if nothing else, reassuring that there was some sort of sense of sentiment in the wider fan base. You could easily get promoted to the Premier League and become very Premier League about things and become all business and become like, well, if we carry on this route, then we're going to get relegated. But it was heartening to be there and discover that people kind of did still share this sort of sentimental attachment to a guy that, if you were making a logical argument, you could, there were many logical arguments to say, yeah, it might be time. He look, possibly he's losing the players a little bit. He's not using the players that we've got in the right way. But that didn't really matter. It didn't really matter to me that he was playing Morgan Gibbs-White on the wing or not using Sangare properly or all these other things. What mattered was that, you know, this was a guy who has meant more to me than I think any other manager at Forest, because, as I said, I went to my first game in 1988, but I was 5 at the time, so I didn't really have a full appreciation of who Brian Clough was at the time. I obviously have done since, but as a manager who was in charge of Forest when I have been kind of fully cognizant and involved, there's no one else who comes close, really.
Yeah, he managed us as supporters as well as he managed the team, and yeah, we'll be forever grateful. But the king is dead. Long live the king, Arsha. Tough one for Nuno. It's not quite David Moyes following Alex Ferguson, but he is having to follow one of the most popular, certainly, Forest managers of all time, you would say. I think I'm going to speak for us all and say we probably weren't thrilled when he was announced. But I wonder if actually, in the position that we're going to find ourselves in, he's going to turn out to be a good appointment, because I feel like he's the kind of guy who will enjoy fostering an us against them mentality, you know, if we get a points deduction or whatever. And let's be honest, he's done pretty well in the first few games, right? He's got a tune out of Morgan Gibbs-White. He's beaten Newcastle and Man United. He's doing all he can to win hearts and minds, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right. He does seem to be the guy, or he appears to be the guy that you would want in a situation like this, you know, the us against them. You know, he reminds me of like a sort of like a lovely sort of bearded, self-flagellating monk.
He's definitely got monk energy, you're right,
He's
yeah.
got monk energy, hasn't he? Like, especially when, like, I'm sort of willing him, like every time I see him in the press conference, I'm like, oh, you've shaved. Don't shave. Just let it grow out. I want to see that Nuno. I want to see peak Nuno. You know, I want to see that monk Nuno, you know, and I'm sure, you know, as monks do, he'll probably take this hardship as some sort of sign to redouble his efforts, you know, and really, really get everyone sort of really at the peak of their faith. But yeah, like you say, like, I wasn't happy. Like, I'll be honest, I wasn't happy when he came in. And I guess a lot of that had to do with anyone that goes over to Saudi for football is expunged from existence in my eyes, you know? So that kind of element of him coming back to the real world felt a bit like, oh, right, okay. And I'd sort of conveniently forgotten about the high seasons at Wolves, because they were, and they feel like they were longer ago than they actually were. And then you sort of add in the kind of element of, oh yeah, he's here, but there's another guy who's here as well. You know, and knowing how our relationship with Jorge Mendes went last time, there was a bit of that as well that sort of colored it. You were sort of like, well, it didn't work that time. Why is it going to work this time? Who knows? So there was that. And also it feels like, you know, there's been one too many sort of worm tongues, you know, in the king's ear at this club, you know, and I feel like there needs to be, just leave it to someone who knows what they're doing, who can crunch numbers and get in those players. But I mean, like, you know, football cliche 101, fair play to him. He's come in and he's, you know, he really has played a blinder in the PR stakes as well. You know, he's really like listened and sort of gone, you know, someone's obviously cynical. I'm hoping that it came from him, but, you know, someone sort of either told him or he's had the nous to say, you know, and acknowledge what Steve Cooper did, which is, you know, a win. He just seems to be saying the right things. And he's simplified things as well, which I think has really helped him. He's come in, like, one thing you would say, you know, just one, like, bad thing I would say about Steve's time at the end. Like, I don't feel any kind of bitterness, but if there's anything you would say, you know, to abate those kind of rabid fans who would come at us anyway with this. Yeah, he was sort of a bit guilty of overcomplicating things. You know, there were a few things he could have really sort of, you know, even with Morgan Gibbs-White, just put him back in the middle, et cetera. And also don't try and evolve our style of play too quickly, because it doesn't seem like you have the players. But, you know, Nuno's come in, he simplified things. You know, he's put Morgan Gibbs-White back in his favourite position. It's no fluke that now we're sort of playing a lot better. And, you know, there's now those bigger clubs are, you know, they're back at the club, aren't they? You know, with espresso martinis in hand, making doe eyes at, you know, Morgan Gibbs-White now, which that eventually is going to happen, isn't it? That we're going to lose him. But, you know, it's nice to see that when he plays well, we do well.
I interviewed Nuno after the Blackpool game, and I appreciated the fact that because Forrest hadn't played very well, he'd gone out for a fag before he came to do his interviews. And there's something about that which really spoke to me, of like, I'm having a rubbish day at work, I need to go for a smoke before I deal with these guys.
I love it. I'm not allowed to say probably, but I really like that he smokes. That's great.
There's something quite cool about it still, isn't there? Especially for a monk. What do you reckon, Nick? Is he going to hang around for long? Is he going to keep Forrest up, deduction or not?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. The deduction thing is such a sort of wild card. I mean, he's a very smart man, and I think for that reason, I think it would have been him that said those nice things about Steve Cooper, because he kind of, you know, he knows what he's doing. And he also would have known that, I'm sure someone at the club was very reassuring to him, going, "Now we're fine, we're not going to get charged with all this," but he would have known. He knew that this was a possibility, and he knew that he would have to do his job under those circumstances. So, but it's kind of so difficult to predict any of that without knowing what this punishment is going to be, and, you know, if it is going to be a points deduction, which it almost certainly will be, how many it's going to be, and when we will know about that. I wrote something about this the other day, that it, you know, if you are going to get docked points in any season, it might as well be this season, because the bottom three are, you know, pretty bad. Luton is showing a bit of sort of vague signs of life, and Sheffield United hinted at some competence after Chris Wilder come back, but I don't think that's going to last. So Forrest could quite easily get deducted 6, 7, 8 points and still stay up, given that the bottom three are pretty bad. But again, it's just resenting having to care about this. This should be a kind of time of hope and optimism. You know, as you said, the king is dead. Long live the king. It should be exciting. We should be kind of excited to find out what the new manager is going to be. And we have this kind of just this thing hanging over us, which none of us can control or do anything about, but we just have to sort of deal with it, which is bleak and depressing. Anyway, on that bombshell.
Yeah, look, well, hopefully he can work a bit with the goalkeepers, if nothing else, and improve us a little bit in that regard. Good luck, Nuno, for the rest of the season. Right, there are a couple of ways that you can support our podcast. You can give us a nice review and a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend, and if you're able, you can help out our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham. They offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest, and the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
If you are able to donate, just go to localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. That's localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll put that link in the show notes too. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to look ahead to the trip to Brentford this weekend next. So, Forest go to Brentford on Saturday then, home of their / my spiritual de-pantsing last season on Saturday. Live on Sky here in the UK, it's a 5:30 kickoff time. 16th against 15th. Forest a place and a point better off than the Bees. Arsha, as I mentioned, we're recording this before the Blackpool game, but Brentford went all the way to extra time against Premier League opposition on Tuesday. One would hope that that will play into Forest's favour, but it's a tough looking game, isn't it? Particularly if we get to see the return of Ivan Toney, who scored in this fixture last season. You'd guess Brentford will chuck him in from the start.
Yeah, I think so. You have to. And also looking at their kind of injury list is insane. It's almost like ours. You know, we're sort of, yes, we're 15th and 16th, but we're closer than that. You know, when it comes to like the injury list and you know, just how much we're limping along at this point. Yeah, you would throw him back in, and he looks like he's ready as well. And from all accounts, you know, I think he's been allowed to play B team football. Is that true?
I think he's played a couple, yeah.
So he'll be ready, surely. But I guess it depends as well. Like, I know we don't want to talk about tonight because we don't really like that ground or that team. It gives us PTSD. But it depends what happens tonight. Like, you know, yes, you know, you hope that it would be wrapped up either way. At this point, I don't care. Like, just either way, can it be done in 90 minutes? And can we sort of get back to trying to collect points that they're going to take off us eventually? But yeah, it's going to be a tough game. It's interesting because I actually quite like Thomas Frank. There doesn't seem to be a lot of love for him. He's an interesting guy, I think. And in some ways, I feel like he'd do all right at Forest as well. Like, he'd sort of fit in there. I don't know why. Like, but he is a very interesting man. Like, he masticates so hard.
He's a smoker as well, I think.
Is he really? Mm. But like, the way he chews, like, I feel like his jaw is going to fall off in the second half of some game. Like, it's insane. And he also gives me like Kyle MacLachlan vibes, like Kyle MacLachlan showgirl vibes specifically. I don't know why, but there's just something about him. I feel like he's quite sort of cocksure. But I mean, his style, I guess I like anyone. If you turn up on Monday Night Football and they give you that skit, you come away and, you know, they've done a number on you. Like Gary O'Neill. I love Gary O'Neill now for no reason other than he performed really well on Monday Night Football. So, you know, if you're a manager, really, you should be getting on Monday Night Football because I'll like you by the end of it. But anyway, that's got nothing to do with the game. It's a tricky place, isn't it, to go to, as all away grounds seem to be for Forest, you know. And now we're heading to the, what's it called? It's called the G-Tech Stadium, is it? Is that so? So the cordless Hoovers and e-bikes stadium, is that what it is? That G-Tech, is it?
Could be worse.
Yeah, I prefer it to be the cordless Hoovers and whatever else stadium.
Yeah, I that'd be great. At least they were honest about it. You know, I mean, let's just, you know, say it as it is. It's, you know, it's a hugely memorable ground. But yeah, let's see. It's the away thing. I mean, what's given us heart, obviously, is that Newcastle game. You know, can we sort of get back to that? Because Forest, you know, we look rubbish when we have the ball. We're better without the ball, and we're better hitting you on the counter. So hopefully we can get a bit of that, because obviously we know Brentford like to play that way. So yeah, let's see.
I mean, they haven't exactly been cleaning up at home this season, Nick. They've only won three games against Burnley, West Ham and Luton. They come into this game off the back of a five-match losing streak in the Premier League. We're going to go ahead and assume that Anthony Elanga is not going to be fit to return in this game. But this is the kind of match that Forest are going to need to get something from, right? We can't be conceding in the 82nd and 94th minute again to turn a 1-0 win into a 2-1 defeat like we did last season. You go to a team who are out of form, who are around you in the table and are going to be right down there for the rest of the season, it looks like. You want to be coming away with at least a point.
Yeah, I mean, as Arshi said, they've had horrendous injury problems. I think that they would, I don't know whether it was going to work in Forest's favour or not, that they're going to have to almost certainly throw Ivan Toney straight in, when ideally they'd probably like to be a bit more cautious. But yeah, they haven't got any forwards, which is kind of part of the reason that they are in such bad form at the moment. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of weirdly, kind of historically, not really the sort of game that, or well, certainly last season anyway, not really the sort of game that Forest won. I mean, I think we Forest beat Southampton away when they were at their kind of Nathan Jones nadir, but other than that, it was that those sort of tricky, pain in the ass away games were the ones that Forest didn't do very well in, and then kind of sprung surprises at home. You know, the win against Newcastle, which is the sort of perfect away counter-attacking performance, was, as you said, gives us great heart. Hopefully, you know, as you said, Elanga's probably out, but if Callum Hudson-Odoi can kind of steer clear of tripping over something at Blackpool, because he seems to get injured pretty easily, does old Callum. But I suppose the concern is, and again, we are recording this before the Blackpool game, this kind of concern is that Forest's, the amount of Forest players that aren't available because of AFCON, because of injuries, there's not going to be a huge amount of scope for rotation and giving people a bit of a rest tonight, which under usual circumstances you probably would have liked to. So as well as it finishing in 90 minutes, you just kind of hope that everyone comes out of the Blackpool game in one piece.
Got to keep the momentum going in terms of Morgan Gibbs-White's form as well, I guess, Arsha. He scored against Blackpool. He scored against Man United as well. If Forest are going to stay up, it's going to depend on them not getting deducted too many points, but also Nuno and Gibbs-White continuing to rekindle their relationship, which was apparently a little rocky at Wolves. But again, we spoke about how well he'd done in terms of praising Steve Cooper. A big bit of that was kind of patting Gibbs-White on the back as well, right? And proving publicly that those two get on.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I'd heard that their relationship was slightly tense. So that, again, was another thing where, you know, when his name flashed up, that was another thing that you immediately thought of, like, oh, how's that going to work? Like, is there any resentment? What was that relationship like? Of course, we don't know. But just going on it from what we've seen, I can't remember if it was Morgan Gibbs-White who Nuno did that little dance. Do you remember when he sort of, at the end of the game, did you see that? He sort of went over it, you know, at the end of the game when the cameras are on the pitch and they're sort of roving around trying to pick up whatever they can pick up. There was this great moment where Nuno sort of like did one of those, like, you know, where you put your teeth on your bottom lip and you're like, and he walked over to a player, I can't remember, and he sort of danced over to it, not walked over, and got him in a big hug. I'm pretty sure it was Morgan Gibbs-White, just for the purpose of this, I hope it is. And also, like, you've seen other little things, you know, and other little compliments in press conferences about, you know, how Morgan's matured and, you know, he's really come on as a player. So he's really sending out all the right messages. But the difference is as well, and this is another thing that sort of was a bit like sad towards the end of Steve's time, was that it didn't feel like there was that kind of mutual love, that real love in. And, you know, you'd sort of listen to press conferences and he'd find any excuse to name drop Morgan because, you know, he really loved him. And I'm sure he still does, but you know, just outwardly, it didn't seem. It felt like there was a little bit of possible tension from him playing out of position or what he perceives as his best position. So, just to see Morgan with a big smile on his face and actually really like contributing on a sort of bottom line level is great. And it, you know, all we need now is Taiwo back. If we can get Taiwo back and get maybe 10 or 12 games out of him, you know, then I think we sort of stand a bit of a chance. But like Nick said, you know, it's the AFCON kind of players as well. Like, and also this whole situation, you know, the boring situation that we're in, the PSL and all that stuff. What does that mean recruitment wise? Where does that go? Like, what are we going to be able to strengthen? Who knows?
The goals thing is, I mean, I don't know if this is kind of similar for anyone else, but if anyone would ask you who, you know, Forest's best player was, you say Morgan Gibbs-White. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult to kind of explain why, because he didn't score many goals last season and didn't actually, in terms of the kind of raw numbers, I don't think he actually contributed many assists either. But you know, he scored 2 in 2 games now. If he improves that, then it's not only a player who's brilliant to watch and kind of is central to everything that's slightly less tangible that Forrest do. If he is, you know, the most basic point of all time. If he is good, it's probably good if he keeps scoring goals. But particularly, as you say, with 1 year, I mean, we all get very excited by Chris Wood's hat trick, but I'm not sure we can necessarily rely on him as a, you know, as a primary source of goals for the rest of the season. So if we can get another 5 out of Gibbs-White for the rest of the season, that might, even with the points deduction, might be enough to stay up.
All right, it's a massive game. Forest haven't won any of their last 5 meetings against Brentford. The last victory was 1-0 at Griffin Park, January 2020. A-League poster boy Joe Lolley got the only goal of the game. Whatever happens, we'll react to it in next week's show. And we are nearly done for today. And finally, though, just because why not, we thought we'd get Arsha to analyse Forest great Stan Collymore's appearance in Basic Instinct 2. If you didn't know that he'd done that, that's probably quite stunning news. So just give you a second just to digest that, listener. And we'll hear a little bit of it now. Arsha, he doesn't say anything at all during the 45 seconds that he's in the film. How convincing was he playing the part of a man diddling Sharon Stone whilst off his face, wearing braces and keeping his eyes closed?
Too convincing. I think that's what you said. I mean, he was so good at playing. I don't know what the kids call it these days, because I don't do drugs. You know, it faded, spaced, zooted. Wasted. I don't know, but he was so good at playing whatever that is. Like, he is just like, his eyes are rolling and he's like, you know, they're sort of in your kind of your bog standard sports car seating formation, one driver, one passenger, you know, it's been seen before. And then they're sort of, you know, driving at ridiculous speed through London. It's just like, it's just mad. Like, I had no idea until you pointed that out that he was in it. But, you know, fair enough, man. Fair play to him. Like, he's really good at being wasted. He doesn't say anything. He looks like someone who's been driven home after a gig at Rock City, really. I mean, that's probably standard what you'd look at. You know, you'd see if you were the designated driver that night, you'd probably look over and see someone who looks like Stan Collymore in Basic Instinct 2.
It would be sensational if it turns out the backstory was they had just gone to see the Levellers at Rock City. That's why they were just completely out of it, because they love the gig so much.
But, I mean, like, the whole thing is, you know, if you know your films, it's like a sort of poor man's Crash, which was directed by David Cronenberg. You know, really that kind of like sexualized kind of crashing of cars and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's totally bizarre and sort of a little bit pointless, but well done to everyone involved.
It's a bit of a shame that his character name was Kevin Franks. It felt like it could have been a little bit more luxurious than that. And speaking to the Villa website in 2013, Stan said, "I met Sharon. She was lovely. She was so courteous. during our week of filming. She killed me off in a car and we had to do the filming in a dive tank. I realised very soon that when you see these films that are 2 or 3 hours long, it doesn't tell the full story. what comes next here, Nick? I'm thinking Taiwo Awoniyi's Ken's love rival in Barbie 2 or maybe Marinakis Jr. starring in the sequel to Succession, something like that. Is it going to be more forest folk in movies? Or, I mean, how do you improve on this greatness, I guess, is the question.
That's nice. Maybe Ryan Yates in like a... Oh, Christ, Arshaw, I've forgotten the guy's name. The Midlands-based director.
Shane Meadows.
Shane Meadows, there you go. Ryan Yates in a Shane Meadows film. That feels like it fits.
I don't know. I'd stick Ryan Yates in like a Jarhead-type film. You see that?
Yeah.
You know, some kind of Saving Private Ryan. I'd stick him in that.
Yeah, I think Ryan Yates doesn't have the disposition for the bleakness that would be a Shane Meadows film. Anyway, go and check that out if you like. It's only 45 seconds long. It's pretty weird. But hey, Stan Collymore, great striker, maybe not a great actor.
In case anyone is triggered by these kind of things, there are multiple breaches of the highway code in this in this scene. So, you know, just I don't say I didn't warn you.
Drive safely. Also, Stan does meet a fairly unpleasant end. I hope this hasn't been an unpleasant end to our very first podcast. Many thanks for joining us for it. You can help us out by, as I say, leaving us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, or just tell somebody about it. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram as well. We are at the Garibaldi G, so give us a follow there as well. That would be very helpful. And if you can donate to our charity partner, they'd appreciate that as well. We'll be back next week with another show. Until then, thanks to Arsha, thanks to Nick, thanks to Lucy for producing it as well. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.